Queridos hermanos y hermanas, dear friends, probably every single family has some kind of heartache. Maybe some worry or wound that just won't go away. An illness, perhaps, chronic illness, someone that you worry about a lot. Or a disappointment that resulted in a shattered dream that changes everything somehow. Or a betrayal. Or the lingering effects of alcoholism or substance abuse, addiction of some kind or another. Maybe a relative with a difficult personality that keeps showing up at Christmas and Easter and family events, and it's a problem. Or maybe lack of financial resources, unemployment these days, or underemployment, a tragic death, an alienated child or sibling, or somebody that normally would be close and just for all kinds of reasons, some mysterious, isn't. Every family's got some kind of heartache. Add your own. This morning's parable of the prodigal son, or as we know, many prefer to say, the prodigal father in his lavishness, this morning's parable, it's a literary masterpiece. It's filled with subtle contrasts. Even this morning, again, I was very conscious of the fact that when all was said and done, the father said it was the son that was dead. First of all, we've got that brazen, arrogant young son who callously asks for his inheritance, saying in so many words to his father, "As far as I'm concerned, you're dead. Give me my money." How awful. But that's really what that's about. As far as I'm concerned, you're dead. Give me my money. And the father, undoubtedly hurt and heartbroken, does it. Says, "Here it is." And then there's the other son, I think equally troublesome, but for different reasons. Working daily drudgery in the fields, I get the feeling that it's an individual with simmering resentment and anger ready to flare up on any occasion, and here is an occasion. Feeling perhaps that he was taken for granted, without the kind of relationship that could have been life-giving and sustaining, for whatever sets of reasons, not having the kind of relationship with his own father that he should have. Who's to blame? Who knows? But in modern terminology, we say this is a dysfunctional family. Something is not quite right. And that's the parable. A few years ago, I was invited by the Muslim community down in Racine, my hometown, at the end of Ramadan, that period of fasting, which also for them is a period of reconciliation. I was invited by them to join them in the first meal at the end of Ramadan and ask to address the question, do Muslims and Christians have the same God? And, it was an occasion, an opportunity, perhaps, better. And so I said, yes, I'd be willing to do that. And then afterwards I said, holy smokes, what did I get myself into? And I thought about it. And suddenly I had my own kind of insight that helped enormously as a result of my own family. Namely, I'm the eldest in my family, eldest child. Parents are older than I am, but, eldest child in my family. I have a younger brother, 20 years younger than I am, a couple of siblings in between. And so the question suddenly dawned on me, Do my brother and I have the same parents? It's a good question. Because in one sense, of course we do. Physically, same parents. But in another sense, we really don't. They changed. They dealt with him differently, as I suppose every parent deals with younger and older children differently. I teased my parents. I said, "You practiced on me." And they would laugh and say, "Yeah, as a matter of fact, we probably did. We understood that some things were more important than others, and we adapted accordingly." Last Thursday, I was with the members of the local Muslim Catholic Dialogue. It's a group I started about 2 years ago. It was not easy to begin. And as a matter of fact, I began to understand why, because so often I learn that when that kind of initiative begins in a community, it is often a kind of covered-up effort to accuse the Muslim community of being involved in terrorism or an effort to convert them. So an invitation to enter into dialogue is met with a little bit of caution, hesitation, resistance. Over the 2 years, it's just been a wonderful experience. It really has, at mutual understanding. A couple of the Muslim delegates, as a matter of fact, have their law degree from Marquette University. And so members of our community, and educated, well, standing positions. One is a physician here from Syria, and his family is just torn apart over there. He was at the top of the medical school in Damascus and then was told very clearly unless he joined the Ba'athist Party, he would never get a position in the country. So he came here. Well, you know, over the years it's been interesting because their experience in our American society mirrors almost exactly that of Catholicism 150 years ago, when our ancestors from whatever country showed up here, were perceived as aliens and highly suspected of living under some kind of foreign allegiance, wanting to take over and subvert American democracy. It's just very curious kind of parallel between their experience now and our own 150 years ago, right here in Milwaukee, where sisters could not wear a religious garb in the city, going back and forth to school. They had to change clothes back and forth. Well, back to the parable. No. Did the two sons really have the same father? I wonder. How could the initial gift of reconciliation be some kind of paradigm for all of us? Lent is a time for reconciliation. First of all, with ourselves, with the recognition of our own limitations, our mistakes, things we did and things we didn't do that we should have. Lent is a time of reconciliation in honesty, no fudging with the truth about who we are before God and each other, to be reconciled with that. Lent is a time for reconciliation with our family and friends. Lent is a time for reconciliation within the church because we are divided in so many ways. I said back, as I always do on Ash Wednesday, that the gospel says when you fast, comb your hair and wash your face, and Catholics immediately throw dirt on their face. First thing they do right after that gospel. So, you know, the gospel is about something else than telling people we're fasting. I claim that gospel and Lent is about saying very clearly, we belong to a community that will be different by Easter. And then to work at somehow reconciling ourselves so that we become really an image of God at work in the world. So Lent is about ecclesial reconciliation among us. Then it's also about trying to be an instrument of reconciliation for the whole world, which is very divided. The purpose of the church, I love to say again and again, purpose of the church is to praise God by transforming the world. That's a Catholic perspective. And so if we can be reconciled ourselves within us and among us, so that we're a sign, an instrument of God trying to reconcile the whole world to God and us to each other, it's an effective Lent. It's a good Lent. Finally, back to the parable for a moment. It began with the complaint, if you recall, of some scribes and Pharisees that Jesus welcomes sinners, that he eats with them. They complained about his table manners, that he would eat with those people. Curiously, in the Gospel of Luke, every single meal story is an occasion for offering conversion. Every meal story. Conversion offered, sometimes rejected, sometimes accepted. Which then led me to see or to remember that Pharisees themselves had this practice of having a meal. A meal they called the Havurah, the fellowship meal, in which they gathered to talk about the will of God and to encourage each other to respond in a better way. And every time we sit down, family and friends, for a meal, it can be an occasion for some kind of reconciliation, for a deeper appreciation of every other person with whom we break bread. Every meal, a chance to change our thinking about God and each other, including this Eucharist, when Christ is willing even to sit down with us. Can you believe it? The Gospel of the Lord.